You've just landed inside Launch Street, the innovation podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate and differentiate and get further faster in this crazy cluttered world. And now, innovation thought leader and your super fly host, Tamara Kleinberg.
Hey, Launch Streeters, Tamara here, your host, and I'm kind of embarrassed to admit this, but I hate ice cream. I know it's weird, right? I just don't like it. It's not a diet thing. I just don't like the feel of it. Just blah. I know you're thinking I might have to turn off this podcast, but wait, because it's super good. So here's what happened. I was sitting in the common area of WeWork, which is a collaboration workspace. That's where we have our offices. And I overheard the most fascinating conversation. And yes, I find conversations, in fact, other people's conversations about business, super fascinating. I'm willing to own that I'm geeky like that. So they were talking about how they were struggling because they felt like nothing was behind the curtain in business anymore, that the customer wanted to know everything about you, not just if you had a good product or service, but everything, the good, the bad, and definitely the ugly. And you know what? They're right. Transparency is a must if a business wants to thrive. So with that in mind, I asked Billy Howard to come on and share her insights. She is the author of WeCommerce, an incredible book about the new economy, and founder and CEO of Brandthropology Media, a firm that identifies the most powerful collision point. I love that word, collision, the point of culture and commerce for each client to create captivating story-driven experiences that drive emotional and authentic engagement. I know it's a little bit of an earful, but trust me, we unpack all of this in the interview. I think you'll find our discussion around what it looks like to thrive in the we economy, what the we economy even means for us, why that's so important, and why having a purpose is as important as a product. I actually thought our conversation about why the heart matters more than the mind was super valuable. Okay, let's go pull some heartstrings. Billy, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm so looking forward to digging into this conversation.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, it's going to be good. So I like to for people to get to know you. So tell us, what's one thing people would be surprised to learn about you? Could be, hobby, passion, experience.
What's interesting is that I have the musical taste of a 70-year-old man. I love the Grateful Dead and I love the Doors. Jim Morrison has actually been one of my greatest influences. So that's something that people get a kick out of. I also love to cook and am very into using my creativity in the kitchen in all innovative and cool new ways. But I hate to bake because I don't like the science side of things. So it's really totally the creative stuff.
I feel like you've really thought about that too. Like, here's why I don't like baking. It's very specific, Tamara. I have to ask you though, how did you get that music taste? Because, sometimes with our parents, right, we're influenced. Is that where it came from or is it somewhere else?
No, I just, I don't know where it came from. I just know that it's been a very strong influence. I think part of me was born in the wrong time. I really wish I was alive and rocking around in the summer of love, but I don't know. It's something that's really always inspired me. I'm a huge fan of Warhol. So maybe it's just that era is what I connect to.
Well, that's fantastic. I would not have guessed that. So thank you for sharing that. And I think that kind of goes into a little bit about who you are and how you harness creativity. So let's talk a little bit about that. So you specialize in helping organizations harness creativity to solve business problems. So I want to dig right in. How is, using or harnessing creativity to solve those problems different than just, solving them in the quote unquote regular way?
No, it's a great question. About 7 years ago, I've always been involved in trend spotting and trying to understand what's next. It's always informed a lot of what I do. It's what informed the book I wrote, WeCommerce. But, I kind of realized that there was a major shift that was taking place right around after the financial meltdown. Everything kind of shifted. And, there was this general sense of trusting in one another. And out of that trusting in one another, there came this period of expression of individuals as opposed to just a few select people at the top. And it was at that time that creativity I saw emerging not as a function of optics or as something that resided only in the marketing or advertising department of a company, but really as a critical currency of business, because we've never been in a period of change that we're in right now. I don't think since the Industrial Revolution. So old ways of doing things no longer work. And, you know, whether you are creating a narrative or storytelling or marketing, which is what I specialize in, or really looking at business solutions or problems, reframing questions in different ways, I really believe that the leading organizations in the world are creative from the top down and the bottom up. And that's kind of what I mean by that.
So I want to ask you, you said something kind of quickly, but I think for launch treaters out there, this is really an important thought. And I'd love, Billy, to have you expand on it. You said that creativity is the currency of business. What does that mean?
Well, I think that in order for someone to be successful in today's marketplace, you can no longer just focus on the what, right? You have to focus on the who and the why that you're doing something. That's a lot of what I talk about related to storytelling and brand purpose. But simply put, stories, in essence, are the currency of business along with creativity. So, you know, if that's really the case, and there's really less differentiation by price point in a given industry, with so much commodification taking place, creativity is really this idea of how do you differentiate yourself, how do you stand out from the pack, and how do you really kind of connect, not only in a rational way, but an emotional way. So I kind of feel that, you know, in my book, I actually talk about being an artist of business, and anyone who being successful today really needs to kind of think through that lens. So I hope that maybe answers your question at least a little bit.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I 100% agree with you. And I think the key in what you said there is a couple things. But one is that it really is about differentiation. And to your point, in any industry, there's so much clutter and competition, and to compete on price just sucks you down, right? You're going to be a commodity if you're competing on price. So how do you stand out and how do you do things differently? But you also said something in there about creativity is from the bottom up as well as the top down. And I love that you said that because I think, you know, in a lot of the clients that we work with too, we find that we kind of frame it as innovation, but I think kind of in similar ways, that skill is relegated either to leadership or to some like cool hip group in the corner that has plays by different rules. And the rest of us have to be, you know, kind of day to day. But what you said about bottom up is really, you're talking about everybody participating.
Yes, I think that that's really a large part of what I talk a lot about, this whole idea of shifting from the me to the we. I really believe that we're in a we economy. And I believe that, you know, things like creativity, collaboration, inclusion, I believe that they've really migrated from being activities that are siloed or compartmentalized, purpose falls into that bunch, to being vital components of day-to-day business strategy. So, you know, just like if you're not creative as an organization, I don't think that you can really effectively compete and succeed. I believe that if you don't really collaborate as an organization and recognize that great ideas can come from anywhere, and that creativity certainly can come as easily as it should come as easily from the bottom up as the top down, you know, I don't really think your company is operating in the marketplace that we're living in today.
I want, just for clarity for those who maybe don't know or are kind of getting caught up, what do you mean? What's the definition of a we economy?
Well, I really came up with the idea. It's you know, people talk about the sharing economy, people talking about the collaborative economy. You know, the sharing economy infers altruism. The collaborative economy really talks about this idea of different business models that kind of all make us better in service of the collective we over the singular me. And, you know, when I went out to write my book, I thought it was a catchy way of, you know, kind of looking at a major stake in the ground, probably, you know, as relevant, if you will, as when we had e-commerce. I kind of came up with e-commerce. And I really feel that we are in a we economy. And, you know, it's kind of driving everything everywhere you go. A lot of people tell me that once I point that out to them, then they see it everywhere. So, you know, it's an interesting idea.
Yeah, I think launch readers out there listening, just pay attention, because I think Billy's absolutely right. And you'll see it in all the different businesses, not just entrepreneurial. I think the big ones and the way they're trying to connect to it really is, it's like kind of like when you decide to get a car and suddenly it's everywhere. That's what's going to happen with the exactly. We economy. Exactly. I want to talk a little bit about storytelling, because you had just mentioned it, that it's a really important competency. Why is storytelling, I think now more so than ever? I mean, I think we've always been told, I grew up in the brand strategy and advertising world in New York City, and we always, you know, we're told you have to tell a story, you have to tell a story, but it feels like now it matters more than ever.
No, I think you're 100% correct. And I think the reason for that is what you pointed out that I said earlier, which is this idea that you can no longer communicate and try to compete in the marketplace if you're just talking about what you're doing. You really need to find a way to talk about why you're doing something and who you are. What is the identity as a brand that's actually doing it? Because people no longer want to just have transactions with brands. They want to have interactions with brands, and experiences need to be brought to life through something. And storytelling and brand purpose are two things that really, really drive that type of engagement that results in, you know, what everyone's striving for, which is, you know, a positive bottom line return.
I love the idea, by the way, as you were saying that, I was just taking notes of every time we put something out into the marketplace, any touch point of asking ourselves, are we building an interaction or a transaction? Because I think sometimes it's easy to get lazy and just build a transaction, right? You get it done, that invoice, that marketing piece, that sales piece, that phone script, whatever it is. But it's hard. You have to be more thoughtful, don't you, to build an interaction?
Absolutely. I mean, it's basically, you know, you have to today form long-standing relationships with consumers. So, you know, no different than if you went out on a date and you only went out with somebody once, it may be what you want at that particular moment, but it's not
that's a different podcast.
Different podcast. You know what I'm saying? That's not a long-term situation. And in the past, you know, the transaction was the milestone of victory because you got ka-ching and it went in the cash register. Today, you really want a brand to be with you for your journey and you to be with theirs. And that's something that involves a lot more to it than just the emotional gratification of buying something. You need to be emotionally satisfied with who this brand is, what they stand for. And, you know, that ties a lot to particularly the climate that we're in and the fact that people are looking for a way of expressing themselves, and voting with your wallet is something that's extremely powerful for people today.
So I kind of have two questions in one. So I'm going to say them both. So you kind of tell me where you want to start or which side of the coin you want to start on. I'm curious, number one, why we get it wrong so often, or why we stop short of that place of emotional satisfaction delivering that. And if you have an example of that, of a brand, a business that you think like, hey, and you don't have to throw them under the bus. You can be general about who they are. But, you know, hey, here's where they fell short. And the flip side to that is I'd love to hear a story of maybe it's one of your clients who is just killing it out there with what you're talking about.
You know, I think many brands, I don't want to pick on one, but I think many brands are not connecting emotionally with people. I think that they are kind of trying to embrace a lot of the tenets that are driving success today, but they're not really becoming those ideas. They're just kind of, you know, I call it purpose washing. They're saying that they're purposeful, but their entire ethos and what they actually do for a living is not. The brand purpose isn't the entire future of the organization. Somebody who does that amazingly well is Seventh Generation. You know, Seventh Generation, the name itself is what it stands for, and it's what it delivers on each and every day. And that's why people around the world have this massive affinity to this brand, because their entire existence is, yes, they make awesome household products, but their entire purpose and reason for being is to leave the world better than when they came into it for the seven generations that will follow us. And that is an amazing story, and that is an amazing journey that you're asking a consumer to take part in. And they do this through their products, they do this through the stories they tell, they do this with everything that they are in the ecosystem of their brand. And, you know, I don't know if that answers your question, but that's an example of someone who I think, you know, hits it out of the park.
So how do they deliver that then? And like, what is it that you see them do that makes you go, they're nailing it?
Well, let's look at another brand who I think nails it. I mean, they've been around doing it a little bit longer, but it's Tom's Shoes. And the reason that I think Tom's Shoes nails it is not because of the one-to-one model. The one-to-one model is great. Don't get me wrong. You get an emotional lift in the fact that you buy a pair of shoes. And, you know, when you do so, someone gets a pair that's in need. But even greater than that is Tom's entire retail model is a community outpost model. And they were the ones who have kind of led the way for brands to, instead of setting up a store or just a retail environment in cities and communities around the world, they are becoming, you know, kind of centers of community. The Tom Shoes model, you know, it's a place for communities to come together, to converge, to have a cup of coffee, to maybe have a meeting, to talk about ideas, and yes, also to buy a pair of shoes. And I think that you're seeing that a lot more in how, you know, retail and other brands are playing a role in the communities that they operate in. So it's, again, moving from this idea of transaction to meaningful interaction and going way beyond just, you know, an interaction with someone that contributes to your own bottom line.
Do you think that if your team, your employees kind of up and down, I think, the organizational ladder, really get your purpose, really internalize your purpose, it's really part of your business strategy, that then opens them up to bring more creative thinking to their work? Is there a connection there between how that purpose is lived out in a company and the ability for us as employees and leaders to bring those creative ideas to the table?
I think that's an outstanding point. I think that people in the past did not realize that, or maybe it just wasn't necessary, but you know, people didn't realize that winning brands today need to start at home. Okay. You know, culture is everything. And that's why you're actually seeing the HR function, kind of the traditional HR function, the more utilitarian components of it with forms and, you know, healthcare and stuff like that. That's kind of shifting off to the side. And marketers are actually taking a much more active role in building internal cultures, because if you don't build an internal culture at home, it's impossible to imagine that that's going to halo outside in any type of positive way.
Isn't that funny? I always find it so ironic when sometimes, you know, you talk to or you go into a company and they just don't, their employees are not first in their minds. And you're just thinking, yeah, but these are your best advocates. They're the ones who live and breathe your brand and your business every day.
Well, it's the same thing. You know, it's a very significant shift. You know, there's always been companies who got employees better than others. There certainly are those companies that you mentioned that didn't particularly care about their employees at all. But that's not actually possible anymore, you know, because everybody today, because of this experience economy that we're living in, this age of empathy that we're living in, you know, everyone is a customer, whether you're a consumer, you're a B2B customer, or you're an employee. You know, if you're not engaged with and you're not, there are not stories told to you and you're not excited to be a part of something, then you're really not going to want to be an advocate, if we're talking about employees, or an ambassador for a brand. And more people want to go to work today and do exactly what we've been talking about. They want to have a grander purpose than just fattening the company's bottom line that they work for. So there's all of these different factors that have kind of happened over the last several years, and a lot of that I kind of try to bucket under this we economy or we commerce idea, because there's so many disparate dots and changes that have taken place that they become much more powerful when you try to piece them together and make them mean something.
Yeah, you know, it's so fascinating. So we have this innovation assessment, tells people how they innovate, and we have partners who are certified in it to give it. And every quarter we do a campfire where we literally sit around. Sometimes if I can, I bring in s'mores, and we share stories about our experiences. And I think that's been better for our business than any formal process we could have ever gone through, though, just each of us sharing, like we were around a campfire, just to go to your point about how important stories are and purpose and that connection and that we sometimes see as an added value versus part of our business.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a great point. By the way, I took that innovation quiz and I thought it was really cool.
Oh my gosh, wait, I don't have your results in front of me. If you have them, you have to tell me, because I'll loop them in, because it's always fascinating to me what people are. I can guess, but if you have them, tell me.
I don't have them in front of me.
I might look it up while you're answering your next question.
You should, because I think something happened that maybe I didn't read them correctly, or maybe I didn't, whatever. But yeah, please look them
up. I'm going to look.
I really enjoyed it.
But yeah, good.
Yeah, I think that people need to feel that they are a part of something. And I think that whole idea of, you know, when the world fell apart in 2008, people lost trust in big business and big government. And out of that came a tremendous amount of trust in one another. And it's only through this trust in one another, no matter what prism or lens you're looking at that through, customer to employee, consumer, whoever, it's all about that trust and the relationship component that really makes the difference, I think, in if you're going to be successful or not.
I want to dig in on a different level because I read on, I think it was a blog that you wrote or an article, you were talking about emotional intelligence having to do with brand success and ultimately its future. And, you know, we've heard a little bit about emotional intelligence in terms of our, I think, you know, professional development and just in terms of it being something really powerful and actually having, I'd say, tangible benefit to it. But I was surprised to see it connected to brand success. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. You know, I have actually had the pleasure of being an IBM futurist for the last year, and I got really close to the Watson technology and really trying to understand how artificial intelligence can be put forth more on the creative side of marketing than the data side. Out of that, I wound up being introduced to a company called Sentiment, that's a With Watson company at IBM, to come together to figure out, you know, how do you use the power of technology cognitively or neurodata to really drive the creative process. And out of that, you know, came a union. We're merged together now because we believe that there is a tremendous amount of opportunity to connect customer emotion to a brand's performance. And the reason that that happens is, you know, we found that brands have a 50% increased likelihood in achieving their desired outcome if they infuse emotion into the process. And, you know, what is the reason for that? You know, beyond the science, I don't know why it happens, but when people feel that you are connecting with them on an emotional level, in addition to a rational level, the impact of what that net result is mind-boggling. And, you know, I really believe that that has to do with this idea that empathy is a critical component today, not just in, you know, internal communications, but in everything that you put forth to the world. Emotion is, you know, a key component of success. And I think, again, all of these things are connected. People want to collaborate. People want to have a sense of purpose. And, you know, in order to stand out from the pack, emotion needs to be a part of everything that you're doing because it makes a lasting impression and it gives people a reason to engage.
You know, it's so interesting that you kind of took it to that emotional level, because I'll have to tell you, and I'm in my mid-40s, so I grew up in the workforce where you did not bring your emotions to work. Right? Like right. You had your personal life and you had your professional life. And you see that a lot actually still today. I think the new generation coming into the workforce is changing that. But yes. It always kind of blew my mind because I thought, hold on, we're emotional creatures. We make emotional decisions every single day, mostly emotional decisions. Rational often does not win. So why are we leaving our emotion out of the place that we spend most of our time doing most of our work? So I always thought when you look at brands and businesses that are really killing it, I think part of it is they recognize that that emotion that we have as humans is actually really good for innovation, for creativity, for the work that we do. And I'll just tell you very quickly to throw my friend Sarah under the bus because it always makes me laugh. You know, Lululemon, the yoga pant, you know, athleisure wear. Yeah, sure. So I have a whole closet full, but this a couple years ago now, changed their bags. And it said, "Who is John Galt?" from Ayn Rand, you know, Atlas Shrugged. Yes. And she was so offended by that marketing that she would not buy them again. And I only know that because I texted her to say, "Can you grab me one of those bags?" Because I thought they were so fascinating. And she wrote back in all caps, because that's how I knew she was serious, right? "I will never buy them again because that's just offensive and blah, blah, blah." And I remember thinking to myself, I mean, she has every right to think that. That's all her and all emotion because the product hadn't changed. How fascinating is that? Why do we try to separate ourselves from that?
Well, I don't think that we can anymore. And I think that, you know, to your point, I don't think that was a part of business in the past because I don't think it had to be. But now, you know, whether businesses want to show their soft side or not, they don't really have a choice. So I don't think it's that business has become so much kinder and gentler. I just think it's become a reality of society. And a large part of that reason for emotion is this sense of aspiration and people wanting to have something to believe in. And that might have something to do with the level of bleakness in certain parts of society. I'm not sure. But brands themselves are stepping up to have a much grander sense of moral responsibility. And I think emotion is at the heart of that.
Yeah. And I loved your example earlier, by the way, of Tom's shoes, because there's a lot of one-to-one models out there. Actually, they weren't the first to do it. But the way they did it and the way they connected it emotionally to their customers and to their communities, I think is ultimately what led to their success. There's a lot of, you know, businesses I can reference that if I buy their product, money or a product goes somewhere else. That's not new.
Yeah, I mean, again, if you look at, I don't want to pick on them, but if you look at Etsy, they were one of the most emotionally charged, purpose-driven businesses. And unfortunately, after they were acquired, all of the emotion that drove that business was removed. And let's just say rumor has it that they're not doing it quite as well as they used to, at least from a cultural standpoint and from the level of type of artist and emotional person that would want to work there. So, yeah, there were a lot of pioneers in the movement of doing things for others and being purposeful. But I think that the challenge is, how do you scale that and how do you remain authentic to that vision?
Well, let me ask you about that then, because I think it was one of your Forbes articles that I read, and I wrote it down that, you know, it's about driving engagement with your customer's heart. So how do we do that? How do you think, when you go in and work with clients, how do you think about that?
Well, I think that, you know, you have to understand what a brand is. You can't change what a brand is from a purpose driven, meaning what is their mission in life. But what you can do is really get to the heart of a grander aspiration of what they're aiming to do beyond just making a product or service. And once you get into that there and you get to know the people at the company and you really put your mind around the people that you're serving, you can come up with an emotional connectivity that can not replace what a brand is doing, but it can kind of put a emotional true north at the heart of things. And that is critically important, I believe, in driving everything from the type of people that will want to work at the company to the type of people who will want to do business with you. And, you know, I don't know why it is, but I will tell you that people who just focus on what it is they're selling and what it is that they're offering, you know, I don't think they're doing very well now. And if they still are, that probably won't last for much longer.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. I mean, I always equate it to, you can have the most amazing product in the world or service, but if you wrap it up and it looks and sounds just like everybody else, nobody's going to know. It just adds to the noise.
Yeah, and it can't be, you can't check boxes anymore to say, yeah, you know, we, you know what I'm saying.
Do you think that, I want to loop back with empathy, and I think this actually goes a little bit to transparency too. Do you think that that's a matter of, you know, getting those of us who are in charge of the businesses and the brands and the products out of our offices and into the shoes of our customers? And I'm kind of asking because, you know, if you look at the media recently and a lot of the large businesses that have had, you know, just call them major faux pas in what they've, you know, brought to market. Like, we'll just pick on Pepsi for a second, right, in their ad. Right. Is that because they're not, the empathy part is missing? They're not in tune with what's really happening, or is there something else going on there?
Well, I think that this is a year where we've not seen as many brand crises as possible. And my theory on it is that brands have, by and large, many of them become emotionally illiterate. I don't think that people have had.
It's a great way to say it.
People have not had a need for what I call in business emotional literacy. So whether you're looking at, you know, what happened with United Airlines, or you're looking at some of the other interesting things, let's say, that have happened with brands this year, Pepsi being one, Dove being another. You know, I don't think that anybody comes at things with the intent of doing something wrong. You know, particularly Pepsi and Dove are great examples. You know, they were trying to be purposeful, but there's a very big difference when I speak to clients in being, you know, of intent and execution. And we believe that if you know, you can have the greatest aspiration and the best of intentions, but if you do not figure out how to communicate those in a way that's going to be emotionally literate, it doesn't really matter. And that has to, you know, just like creativity, that has to be bred from the top down and the bottom up. So it needs to happen, you know, with a flight attendant on an airline, no different, you know, than it has to in a studio inside of a brand who's putting out a major piece of content and doing it in a vacuum. So I think it's driving everything.
Tell us a little bit about how you work with your customers and what they're looking for when they call you. I'm always curious, like, what's the pain that gets them to pick up the phone and say, I need to work with you or your company?
Well, I think we're getting, you know, we get interest on two fronts. One is, I think that people realize that purpose is no longer, you know, a marketing ploy. It's a critical thing that needs to define a company's future. And I think that people, when they wrap their head around that, they understand that storytelling is the most compelling vehicle of figuring out how to funnel, purpose throughout the entire customer journey. I think people are also very interested in more recent times of our understanding of cognitive technologies and how to introduce them to the C-suite. You know, AI is a huge idea, and it's a buzzword that's unfortunately been so overused, it's come to mean nothing. Because when I go around and I ask people in the C-suite, a chief marketing officer, a chief executive officer, a chief human resource officer, how do you understand AI in a way that it can help you do your job better? Everybody, by and large, has the same answer. I have absolutely no idea.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you say that. I was at a conference recently, and they had these breakouts on AI. And when they came to my keynote, I was asking them, how was it? And they were like, well, I don't know what to do with that. That was the response. It was fascinating.
That's exactly right. So yeah. What we've done is we have, you know, taken the best of Watson, you know, the APIs that power Watson, there's thousands of them. So we've taken the ones that make the most sense for, you know, the areas that we focus on. And we've married them with neurodata, which is that emotional piece, to really be able to sit down with somebody and figure out what their job is and what they're trying to achieve and who they're trying to reach. And simply put, our goal is to figure out how to, you know, best capture customer emotion and connect with it in a way that's going to really drive to improve performance in whatever area it is that they're responsible for. So those are two things we seem to be connecting with the marketplace on, at least for right now.
So I have to ask, how did you become an IBM futurist? Because that to me is like a Disney Imagineer. Like, it's just so cool. How does that happen?
I think that it happened because I saw that they launched their Think brand, which I saw was very cool. And they saw some of the things that I was doing on social media. And, you know, they were trying to take their program they've had Futurist for a while. I think they were trying to take the program in a little bit of a different direction, meaning they had a lot of influencers who had huge followings and also did marketing, whereas I'm a marketer and also happen to have a big following. And I think that they were trying to figure out, how do you really make this type of technology accessible to a CMO? And that kind of, fortunately,
and there you have it.
My sweet spot.
By the way, I couldn't pull up your results without tuning out to the conversation. I didn't want to do that. But I think on the innovator archetype, I think you're an instinctual collaborative. That's my guess based on your language. And let me just tell you why. And then I want to go back to your book, WeCommerce. So instinctuals are people who have a more circuitous path in terms of their thinking. So they connect A to X to L to, you know, N, like, so the rest of us are ABC. So you tend to connect dots in new and meaningful ways. And with all the, like, the we economy, the purpose washing, like all of your ways of putting these different trends and nuggets together, it makes me think that you might be instinctual. And then collaboratives are people who aren't just magnetic and, like, build teams and are great with people, which I think you sound like you are. Also, you tend to find yourself at the intersection of random, where great innovation thrives, and you pull, you know, experiences and people and ideas together to form ideas. So that's my guess for you, by the way, is you're an instinctual collaborative, just listening to your language. So,
well, I'm not gonna argue with that.
Well, it's a great combination because you're so good at seeing the trends and patterns before everybody else. Instinctuals are brilliant at that. And the second part of that is pulling it together into an idea. It's one thing to see the trends and the patterns. It's another thing to be able to then mold that clay into something really powerful, which I think you sound like you do. So, okay, I just had to, as we were talking, I was smiling because I was like, I bet that that's what she is. I'm like, you know, 85% right. I'm working my way up to 100.
We'll go with the, I'm going to take the correct and tell everybody that that's what I am. So
I love it. Before I ask you my last question, where can people go to connect with you and learn more?
You can go to our website, which is Branthropology with an IE at the end, .com. You can find me on Twitter, or LinkedIn is some place that I'm very active. So feel free to reach out, email me, whatever makes most sense. I'd love to chat with you.
Excellent. The last kind of question I want to ask you is around WeCommerce, your book, because we didn't get a chance to dig into that. Tell us a little bit about what it's about and give us one or two nuggets that you think we can implement or think about today.
Sure. You know, it really is an amalgamation of a lot of what we've discussed today. It's really about how to create, collaborate, and succeed in the new economy. I believe that if you do not have an appetite for change and an appetite for disruption, you're not going to be able to succeed in today's environment, because what's driving success today, you know, is vastly different than it was, you know, 5 years ago, let alone, you know, changing in a pace that's even more rapid every single day. You know, purpose is a key component. Creativity and storytelling is another. But really having the understanding that whatever it is that you're looking at, we are all better in service of the collective we as opposed to the singular me. That is a big idea, but that has broad application whether you are talking about how to build a company, how to treat your employees, how to find ways of collaborating with even your competitors. The marketplace has changed, and if you don't understand that collaboration needs to be a part of business strategy as opposed to just an a strategy in isolation, or an activity rather in isolation, I don't think that you're going to succeed, and WeCommerce takes a look at that, as well as the guiding principle that kind of has always driven me, which is, you know, if you want to be the best in the world, you have to push yourself constantly to a point of being uncomfortable, because to me, once you're comfortable, you've reached a point of complacency and you're no longer on a path to success. And WeCommerce kind of hopefully gives people some thoughts on how to do just that.
We will absolutely put it in the show notes, because that is, I think, a fantastic resource and something that everybody should read. Because I think that, you know, what I'm hearing from you through this whole interview is that things have changed. So you can't do them the way you've always done, which I 100% agree with. And this we economy is not a trend. It's not something that's, you know, is the flavor of the month, like the new technology or the new catchphrase. It really is how we are living our lives, and hence how we should be doing business.
Yes. And I appreciate you saying that. And, you know, that's why I called it something different, because it's not the sharing. It's not a right. fad. It's a fundamental shift in how we live, work, and play. And, you know, it's always a pleasure to talk to someone like yourself who understands that.
Hey, well, I couldn't agree with you more about the way the economy is moving. And I think where I definitely could do some work, and I was taking notes as you were talking, was how do you take your purpose and actually infuse it into everything that you do, versus it being something you stand for and you stand up on your pedestal, but you're not really living it in your business every single day. And that's something, at least for me out of this, and I hope Launch Readers too, is something I'm going to work on moving forward.
Well, that's nice to hear. And, you know, if there's any way I can be of help to you or anyone of your listeners, please feel free to let me know that. And I admire what you do, and I've really enjoyed being here today. So thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you so much for joining us. And Launch Readers, go pay attention to what she's up to in the company, because it really is. It's fantastic. So, Billy, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much.
Before we part ways, what did you think? We live in a whole new world, don't we? So listen, if you get value out of our interviews like this on Inside Launch Street, do me a favor, go to iTunes and write us a review. More reviews equals more listens. More listens equals more top-notch guests that want to come on. And that benefits me and you. So basically, it's selfish, because the better and bigger we get, the more value you get. See, being selfish can be good. Click on iTunes, write us a review. Thank you so much. Tamara out.
Thanks for hanging out with us inside Launch Street.
When you're ready to take your game to the next level,
join the thousands of others that are upping their innovation edge
on GoToLaunchStreet.com,
the top online education resource and community platform for innovators looking to use innovation to get measurable results.
GoToLaunchStreet.com.